So am I still waiting, waiting a long time,
waiting for tonight.
Listen to Review Juve. The
Welcome everyone to Review Away. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting. Another week, another show, another fun time ahead, Mr. Ting.
Yes, another one.
Yeah. Judgment Day. Hmm? I remember this pay-per-view very, very distinctly because it was during this show that I, at that point in my life, I was working at Canada's Wonderland. For those in Toronto that are familiar with it, it's a theme park here in just outside of Toronto. And I remember going to work that morning. It was the long weekend because we have a holiday on the Monday called Victoria Day. And I got there to work at 9 a.m. And at Wonderland, they would always basically, they'd come around and say, how long do you want to work for? It was never a set shift. It would be like, when do you want to work till? So I'd usually get there at 9, be like, 3 o'clock, 4, whatever. They're like, okay, we'll try and have you done by 3. Now, they had fireworks going on that night. It's one of their big, big nights. So they came back, and they're like, can you stay till 6? I was like, all right, fine. I'll stay till 6. I just worked the whole Saturday as well. So then 6 comes along. Can you just stay till 8? At this point, I'm thinking, motherfuckers, the pay-per-view's starting at 8. So I had to call home. I'm like, can you please tape Judgment Day? I'm going to miss the first match or two. Then they come by, 9:30 tops. I'm like, 9:30? That's going to be 12 and a half hours I've been working here.
Are you getting overtime?
No, the holiday was the Monday, not the Sunday. So it's regular pay, minimum wage.
Why did you just say, fuck off, I'm not doing it?
It was my first month there. I was 16. I didn't have
it's just
any
Wonderland.
Rights.
Well, meaningless.
Well, I was
nothing
won-
is
I was
more nothing w- is more important.
Wondering why I was working here. That was the wonder. So then 9:30 comes. Can you just close tonight? Can I close? I open today. I finished there at 11:30. 11:30, way 14 and a half hours after I stood in that booth. I should also mention that we weren't allowed to sit during our shifts. This was an incredibly painful day. So I came home that night super late. I was so exhausted. I couldn't even watch the pay-per-view. And then I went to sleep. And thankfully, the Monday, they had given me the day off. They gave me the day off on the day where I made time and a half. And I watched the VHS of Judgment Day 2000 and avoided spoilers because I didn't go on any Facebook group on May the 21st of 2000.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so that's what I remembered. I remember that pay-per-view like it was yesterday, Wei, vividly.
Okay.
How did you enjoy Judgment Day 2000 when it occurred?
I never watched it.
No, you'd never seen this show.
I never ordered pay-per-views. I was always too cheap and... Nope, I never ordered them back then. So
you weren't even watching at this time period, were you?
I was watching.
Oh, you were? Okay.
Yeah, I just wasn't paying for pay-per-views. So
I paid.
Good for you.
And it's my VHS copy that I rewatched this week.
Oh, wow. Nostalgia.
Yep.
So this was a Judgment Day, of course, chosen by you, the fans. And,
yes.
Before we get into the review itself, why don't I just run down the result of the poll?
Yes, let us know, Wei, because you chose the candidates.
Yes.
And
we'll be doing this. We won't be doing this every single week, but occasionally.
I think we should do it maybe once a month. We'll let the fans have the choice.
Viewer's choice.
Viewer's choice.
So coming in We received a lot of votes, 181 votes from all of you. Been coming in last place, Judgment Day 2007, featuring John Cena versus The Great Khali with only 13 votes. Coming in fourth is Slamboree 2000, featuring the triple cage match from Ready to Rumble, receiving 30 votes. With 32 votes, we got WCW Capital Punishment.
I wanted that one to win.
With RoboCop. Then we have Flair versus Fujinami from Super Brawl 1 with 33. And with an overwhelming 73 votes, Judgment Day 2000.
Wow. So now, you had a theory on this about we should limit it to three candidates for the future.
I think we'll do that next time because I don't know how much how much this affected the results. But on Facebook, when you do put up a poll, they only show the three candidates first before you're forced to click on for more, and I have a feeling that, even if I was doing it myself, I might just not even bother looking at the other two before I voted. So
pretty lazy.
Yes. We're a lazy generation, and so I think next time we'll just because I feel like RoboCop or the Ready to Rumble matches would have done a lot better.
I honestly thought RoboCop was going to win, but it also had the WCW early 90s, it's like this blur. No one associates anything with it.
True.
It's just these weird shows.
Oh, well, maybe next time. But anyway, Judgment Day 2000, a fine show.
Yes. Nothing gimmicky like RoboCop on this show. Nope. Taking place, as we mentioned, May the 21st of 2000 from Louisville, Kentucky in Freedom Hall. And very weird opening video to start this off with, where they're previewing the Iron Man match, and they have all these stats, all these statistics of what happens in an hour. 14,849 babies are born.
Sorry.
Wow. What did you do? Put your chain?
No, I put my keys
down.
Yeah.
5,936 people die. 1,560 times you blink.
How
do you monitor this stuff?
I can't believe you wrote all this down.
I had to go back and rewind because they were flashing. 21 times you think of sex, where they had the greatest B-roll of like these
girls.
Yeah, but they looked like they were like, these showgirls that were just
like
a photo
sluts.
Shoot.
Just sluts.
Whores.
Yeah.
And they said that the Rocket Hunter will lose 7 pounds over the course of the hour and take more hits than a quarterback during the regular season.
7 pounds. That's quite incredible, actually. I mean, probably a true stat.
Great workout.
Yeah, well, it is. Yeah, it is. But I thought this was cool. I think it really put over the Iron Man concept very well, and this was very well done opening.
Yeah, maybe we'll get a similar one for Cena and The Miz next week about I Quit, of what happens when you quit. And they can give examples of, like, quitting your job.
Ah.
Quitting,
Quitting smoking.
Yeah, quitting, looking at all the options of a poll that has 5 answers.
Uh-huh. Quitting your application on your computer. File quit. Okay, let's move on.
Quitting sex, or thinking about it 21 times an hour.
Okay.
Our sponsor for tonight, it's Army World Men, which I had no clue if this was a video game or if this was, I don't know, a United States policy. I don't know. I don't know what this was.
Probably
a horrible sponsor.
Probably a game.
We've got Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler. And I swear to God, the show started not with a hot match, not with a great promo, but instead a backstage skit about coffee.
Yeah.
We were backstage in the absolute worst backstage setup. Like, they were in the back of a building where they put up,
drapes.
Yeah, these gray curtains and splashed some red light onto it. It looked horrible, dude. It looked, I always go back to our Ryerson days. It looked like our second year studio project. Yeah. This was a horrible set. This was the WWF in 2000. Oh.
I know.
They were swimming in money.
Yeah.
And this looked terrible way.
It did. I agree with you.
Looked like a tablecloth put on these like metal trusses and some splashing some light on it.
I don't know why they couldn't have just found an actual, office.
You would think. Maybe Freedom Hall didn't have any offices.
Mm.
Anyway, DX is heels at this point. Hunter's there, Vince, Shane, Stephanie, and then Gerald Briscoe walks in wearing the hardcore title. and they ask, where's Pat Patterson? And he missed his plane, which very well, I guess, could have been legit. And then Briscoe starts taking coffee orders, and everyone says how they like their coffee. I think Tori wanted cream in her coffee. Someone wanted it black. Hunter says, I like mine fast. Huh. Terrible set, as I noted. Then we cut to Briscoe, where he goes off, and he's attacked by the Headbangers. Because, of course, you had the 24-7 rule for the hardcore title at this point. And that's it. They just attack him. And I guess, what, did Briscoe run off here? I don't even know how this ended. I just have Briscoe being attacked by Headbangers.
Yeah, I guess he ran off. I don't remember. But he escapes with the title. We'll later find out.
And this was the start of, like, a whole pay-per-view long set of vignettes involving Gerald Briscoe as the chicken shit hardcore champion.
Yeah. But yeah, definitely an odd way to start off a pay-per-view.
Coffee.
Well, it felt like the continuation of the Sunday Night Heat more so than the beginning of the pay-per-view.
Yeah. Then they show Shawn Michaels walking backstage in the tightest spandex shorts you've ever seen and a referee shirt. He looked horrible.
He looked very, anyway. In the match itself, when he was wearing these shorts, it was really uncomfortable for me personally to watch, because he would always like crouch and get his ass like right in front of the close-up of the camera. Anyway,
Kurt Angle comes out. He cuts a promo about getting a lot of attention from teenage girls, and he's considered to be all that. And this was a rare promo from Kurt Angle that was, I thought, was pretty bad. He stumbled all over his words multiple times.
Yeah.
Not great.
It wasn't pretty bad. Like, by D.H. Smith standards, this was good.
Cool. But, I'm not judging Kurt Angle by D.H. Smith standards.
Sure.
Judging him by Kurt Angle standards. Christian comes out with Edge, and he welcomes us to Louisville, and they do their brand new pose called the Jug Band, where, and this is one of the poses that is more well known, like when Edge had his whole goodbye video, they showed this pose in there where he had the false teeth and he was all cross-eyed and they just looked like a jug band. This is I remember watching
all this. Jug bands have false teeth and
yes, they're all hillbillies.
Yeah.
And they drink moonshine.
Yeah.
And that's what
the X's on the jug.
These three were all at a very comedic high at this point in their careers in the 2000 WWF environment.
I really like the pairing of all
three. Yeah, the three
guys
worked very well
Team
together.
Eck.
Team Eck. They were taking on the team of RTC, Rikishi Too Cool.
There's nobody else in this built office that would ever chuckle at that joke.
There's no one in this office who would get anything we do in this room. The heels are Irish whipped into the corner, sends Too Cool into them, but the heels bail before Rikishi can hit them. The crowd was really into Too Cool. I think you look back and laugh at Brian Christopher and stuff, but these three were so over at this time period. They were a great babyface act on any WWF show.
Especially when you coupled Rikishi with them. They were really this was the peak of their popularity of all three men's careers, I would say.
It also helped, I found, that a hot product makes everyone seem more important.
Absolutely.
What I mean? Like these crowds, you watch any pay-per-views from 2000, you had some really, really hot crowds.
I agree with
and
you.
It just made everyone come across as bigger stars than, Rikishi and Too Cool. Put them into today's environment and it's not quite the same.
I don't know.
They might work today, but
see, what was great about Too Cool is that they happened to fill the comedy role that was, they took the biggest comedy role in the company at the time, and they did a very good job at it. And it's a role that, Santino has taken right now and is doing very well. But it's a role that I think is necessary for any era of pro wrestling.
There was a lot of stuff in watching this show where, man, this company was just... I know a lot of people, they'll look back and you think that 99, 2000, it was like, man, television ratings were so much bigger. And you look back and it's really the amount of viewers they do today on Raw. It's not that far off from what they were doing at the peak. Like USA is in a lot more homes and stuff. But you watch this company, it was like, man, they did so many things right at this time that today it's like they're so far from that in certain regards. I was amazed watching this. It was just such a different philosophy, and it was really almost...
Yeah, it wasn't particular.
It was jarring to watch it.
What in particular about this?
The announcing, for one. The announcers were incredible on this show.
Really?
I'll get into it later. Okay. They were just so much better than the current announce setup. Let's continue on with this match. There was a spot where Christopher started dancing and his pants fell down. And I don't know if it was a planned spot or not, but it got a nice little reaction from the crowd. They saw his underwear. Christian then comes in and he starts mocking their dance, and Rikishi attacks him. The heels then isolate Rikishi in the corner, but he fights back, makes the tag to Scotty, and he goes for the worm but gets cut off by Kurt Angle, then the hot tag to Rikishi. And then we get the spot where Rikishi splashes all three heels in the corner, delivers the stink face to Kurt Angle, which Jim Ross called the stinky face. I guess it was still getting its name at this point.
Yeah, I think there was a sign that fans held up that said stinky face, so...
I'll never forget that a few months before this show, it would have been March 2000, there was a house show at the Sky Dome. And it did like a retarded amount. It did like over 20,000 people or something like that. And I remember I was like debating whether I should go to the show or not. And they announced the lineup like a week before, and it was like Benoit versus Jericho. And it was the first time they were going to be doing a singles match since Benoit came into the company. And I'm like, fuck, I got to go watch that. That'd be awesome. And I got there, and the fuckers switched the lineup around, so it was Benoit and Rikishi.
Oh.
So I got to, instead of Benoit Jericho, I got Benoit losing to Rikishi and taking a stink face. And I felt so angry that I had spent my like $25 to see a match and I did not get it. And I literally got one of my favorite wrestlers at the time getting an ass stuck in his face for my $25.
Card subject to change.
Ugh. I was hoping that would not be the case. So anyway, Kurt Angle takes the stinky face. Rikishi then no-sells a DDT by Angle and Christian, and then Edge spears Scotty, and Edge teases going for the worm, but he's stopped by Scotty, and then Scotty hits the worm onto Edge. Rikishi goes for the Rikishi driver, but he takes a ring bell shot from Christian. Then Christopher hits a top rope guillotine leg drop onto Edge, and Rikishi comes over and pins Edge, and the baby faces get the win. They dance, they celebrate after the match, and got some pyro. Good opening match.
Yeah, I thought it was a really good opening match. Comedy match. Really well done. Everybody hit their spots, and great reaction from the crowd.
You don't seem motivated by this opener. It was just there for you.
I thought it was good. Yeah. I don't know. What else am I supposed to say? It was good. It was really good. It was the best I've ever seen.
Well, what came up next was not the best. It was an interview with Shawn Michaels, performed by Michael Cole, who was wearing a red shirt with his frosted tips.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh, this guy was just hideous in 2000. Cole calls him the most controversial wrestler in history, and then Michael says he's the greatest WWF champion of all time. And Cole asks, who are you going to favor? And then brings up all the people he's been talking to prior to this match. And he ends it by saying, well, Sean, there's been rumors on WWF.com that you're jealous of The Rock. And Michael says, well, if it's on the internet, it's got to be true. And says, I've had enough of these asinine questions. And he walks off.
Mm-hmm.
Very awkward interview.
Well, yeah. He was playing a sort of a subtle heel. I guess he was tweening.
The whole point of this guy was to tease that Shawn might turn on The Rock during the main event.
Now, in Shawn's personal life, what point was he at this point?
A low one. He was. This is the part where he was very much on a lot of pills.
He had a kid at this point, though. He was married.
Yeah, but he didn't get clean till like much like a year and a half, 2 years after this. Mm-hmm. So, anyway. We go to Eddie Guerrero arriving with China from outside, and they run into Dean Malenko. And Malenko is not happy with all the time Eddie's spending with China, and he tells China, stay out of our match, which any competent worker would say. And this ends with China sarcastically saying, okay, I'll stay out of your match. And then Perry Saturn walks in and talks about kissing people's asses. It was not great.
So what was this? They were still together in the Radicals, but they were...
I guess the Radicals were falling apart here, and they were going to have a three-way. Just because.
Okay. All right.
So that's our next match, which on paper, when this was announced, I mean, a lot of people were looking forward to Eddie Guerrero, Perry Saturn, and Dean Malenko for the
European title.
And Saturn and Malenko worked together early on to team up on Eddie. Guerrero made a comeback on both and then hit a Hurricane Rana off the top rope with a Greco-Roman knuckle lock. Malenko then rolled through a sunset flip, went for the Texas Cloverleaf on Eddie, but he lets go to clothesline Saturn. Eddie was on the shoulders of Saturn and gets guillotined on the top rope and then takes a suplex. Malenko hit a gutbuster to Eddie off of the second rope. Then we see a splash by Saturn to Eddie, but Malenko breaks up the fall. Now, they tried to trade holds here, but the announcers kind of weren't aware of this. Saturn applied the Cloverleaf to Malenko, which they identified. But then Eddie hits the Brainbuster to Saturn, and Malenko goes for the Rings of Saturn. But the announcers have no clue what this move is and didn't call it as such. Then there was a double suplex by Saturn. And then China. She came out with Eddie and had received this bouquet of roses. And she hit Saturn with the roses. But you don't realize there's a pipe inside of the roses, so it looks like Saturn is selling for flowers.
Well, I think they had used it before. They had used the lead pipe in the roses before, so you're supposed to know.
Okay. China then gets on the apron after taking out Saturn, but Malenko grabs the roses, turns around, and then China goes to the floor, pulls Malenko's legs out from under him, and Malenko goes face first into the loaded roses, and Eddie wins with the Mahastral Cradle. This underperformed, in my opinion.
Yeah, I didn't think it was a good match. It just didn't seem to flow with these
not
three,
at all.
Which is kind of disappointing. There was just too much going on, and they did a poor job, I thought, of keeping focus on two individuals at a time, which is what we typically see.
You almost had to have focus on four people here with China involved in all this, and the finish was just... I didn't like the finish at all.
And also, you're dealing with three heels here. There's no babyface for the crowd to get behind, and I just didn't think the crowd cared either way who won.
Underwhelming. Then they recap Briscoe pinning a sleeping Crash Holly on SmackDown to win the Hardcore title. And this was great because of after pinning him, he celebrates without saying any words, and he's putting his arms in the air.
Yeah.
And... then they identify the clumsy referee, Jimmy Corderas, who trips and wakes up Crash Holly. This was awesome. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed this a lot. And then they go into the arena, and Briscoe is sneaking around backstage into the bathroom. He jumps when he sees his reflection in the mirror, and then he punches the mirror. So the story is he is continually just trying to survive as the Hardcore Champion, even though he's scared out of his mind.
I didn't hate these. I thought Gerald Briscoe did he's another comedy character, and I think as a comedy character, he does fine.
Then we got a video package for the Big Show and Shane McMahon, and it was based on Big Show letting Shane down at WrestleMania, where Shane calls him an unmotivated slob, and no one will ever care about him. And this was when Big Show was doing an angle where he's going to go Hollywood. And Shane kept calling himself Simba and the Young Lion here throughout this video package. And they show him warming up backstage, and that leads to our no-holds-barred match with Shane and Big Show. Big Show came out to his WWF Aggression theme, everyone, which...
by Ice-T.
That's an album we have to review one week.
Sure.
The WWF Aggression theme.
I didn't mind it so
we
much.
We had, like, Method Man and... yeah. Snoop Dogg.
C-Murder.
Oh,
doing
God.
Gangrel's theme.
Wow.
I like blood or something. It's a song.
Awesome.
I don't know.
I have that on CD somewhere. I think I bought it for $5 at a used music store once.
Well, take two things that are very popular and put them together.
Hip-hop and WWF.
Yeah.
Match made in heaven.
Absolutely.
McMahon hits a tope over the top to Show, who catches him, sends him into the post. Then he starts stomping on Shane's right hand onto the steps and then press slams him into the ring. Show calls for a choke slam, but then the Big Boss Man runs in and attacks him with a nightstick. This has to have been the longest running feud ever with Big Show and Big Boss Man. I mean, we reviewed these two feuding at the Survivor Series of the previous year.
Right. I don't know if... I think Boss Man at this point was just helping the corporation, right?
You never forget when a guy steals your father's casket. I mean, that feud was always going to be lingering.
Mm-hmm.
And Show makes his own comeback, power bombs Big Boss Man. And then we have Test and Albert run in with chairs.
TNA.
Yes.
I kept hearing TNA on this show.
I know. And they came in with their chairs, and Big Show just punched the chairs right into their faces. Which would be a theme for the next decade of TNA failing on pay-per-view.
Oh, that's good.
Then Trish Stratus runs in, and We love Trish, but oh my God, here. She attempted a low blow, which I think it had a better chance of tearing Big Show's ACL than hitting his groin. This looked very awkward.
This was perhaps Trish as Evelise, in the Evelise stage of her career.
Yes. She had not Eve evolved at this point either.
Oh my God. We don't pre-write these.
I swear.
All off the top of John Pollock's head.
They're horrible. Trish Stratus attempts the low blow, but is then sent over the top rope and Test and Albert catch her. Then they fight to the entrance, and Shane is sent into the steel wall at the entrance. Show grabs this steel unit that's holding the entrance up, but Shane then grabs onto the entrance and kicks Show in the face, and then TNA attacks Show. Shane then wheels a case into Big Show for a two count. Like, this is the most violent hardcore match ever. Big Show makes a comeback. He stops Test from hitting him with a cinder block.
Yeah.
A cinder block. Shane then climbs up the entrance. Big Show goes after him. Bull Buchanan runs out and attacks Big Show as Shane pushes a speaker onto the leg of Big Show. Show is selling tremendously here. And as Show's leg is caught under a speaker, Shane picks up a cinder block, breaks it on the head of the Big Show, and he gets the win via speaker and cinder block.
Uh-huh.
My God, were they scared to have Big Show lose here, because they literally had him, like, dead before they pinned him.
As they should have. They told the really good story here. It was just, this giant taking on four men using various weapons, and I thought it was really well done, very effective use of props.
They help Big Show into the ambulance, and Lawler says if it was one of them that were hit with a cinder block, they would be unconscious for months.
Mm-hmm.
Months.
Sure.
And then Jim Ross goes over the betting lines going into this match and what odds makers had predicted in terms of Shane McMahon being a huge underdog. It's like he went over this like it was a sporting event with this huge upset.
Yeah.
We then see Gerald Briscoe. He knocks on the officials' locker room and he closes the blinds and he just asks, can I just rest in here for a little bit? And he goes to sleep, and the referees consider going after the title, but then Briscoe jumps up and yells as he leaves, and he leaves with the title. Triple H is with Shawn Michaels in the locker room. They talk about Shawn having a kid. Hunter asks if Shawn is going to wear those shorts and says, it looks like you're smuggling bananas.
Yes.
And then another video package for our upcoming submission match between Chris Benoit and Chris Jericho. Features the two working extremely stiff, where basically both, like, potatoed each other numerous times. Benoit's eye was all screwed up. But this did a very good job, I thought, of getting across all their submission holds, like, in succession of how they were using them in their matches.
And they really, they made this feud pretty much about the cross face versus the walls of Jericho. It's really a concept as simple as that. Whose finisher is better?
Which is one of the big problems when now, like, even the I Quit match with, like, The Miz. What submissions does The Miz have that Cena's going to give up to? Or when they do a submission match, you put it with guys who have no established submissions. Mm-hmm. And you can't just educate people. Here, watching this, it's like the cross face and walls, you've gotten across at this point, and it made total sense to do this match.
Yeah. Well, this is not... Cena and Miz are in an I Quit match. They're not in a submission match.
Well, typically, like, what is a submission match? It's yelling that you quit.
Okay, but Rock versus Foley, for instance, that was an I Quit match. It wasn't based around submissions. But yeah, I know what your point is. Where's the quitting involved in the storyline?
Yeah. I mean more for, like, especially submission matches where they'll announce that as a stip. And you have guys that have no submission holds that are presented.
Usually when they do it, it's between two guys with, or they'll at least tell the story about what submissions this guy knows.
They finish this off with an angle from SmackDown 3 days earlier, where this was horrible to watch. It was a match between Benoit and Hardcore Holly, and after the match, Holly hits Benoit just right over the head with this sick chair shot. And then he attacks the knee of Benoit. And this, I know we've talked a lot about how it's uneasy to watch Benoit matches. Specifically watching this made me really, really uncomfortable watching Benoit take a chair shot like this.
Yeah.
It really turned me off. I, like, really didn't want to keep watching after this point, to be honest.
Just because of, yeah, I know what you're saying.
I don't think really you can possibly just watch something like that and not connect to what would happen.
Not.
I mean,
nope.
That's a huge part of the problems and stuff like that. And I just, it was a real turnoff seeing this. And
I mean, not anyone's fault. It's just coincidentally happened to be on this show.
Yeah. The submission match for the Intercontinental title, Benoit's defending the title in this match, and Benoit comes out with a brace on his left knee. Early on, Jericho attempts a Fujiwara armbar, but then Benoit rolls out, and then each go for a tombstone pile driver. I was shocked these two were allowed to do this, or at least tease it.
They were, yeah, and then eventually Benoit...
It's a shoulder breaker.
Hits, turns into a shoulder breaker, but I'm sure this was, you know, they had... It's a very, very popular spot in Japan, right? And so I'm sure they...
This isn't Japan way.
I know.
This is the big leagues. And this was, of course, the point. I mean, this Jericho's book really puts this into a different context of... Jericho was really... He had a ton of heat at this time backstage. And he was, you know, really kind of fighting for his spot here in the company. Like, and watching this at the time, like, I never really... Especially at this point in early 2000 when they had done the whole tease of the title change of Hunter to Jericho. Like, you thought Jericho was in really good standing, and then you read his book, and it was very far from it, where they weren't impressed with his work. And so this match you kind of watch a little differently, knowing that Jericho was kind of in that role at the time as someone that was, you know, the company wasn't super hot on. Then we got... they showed us backstage, Val Venus was doing the Michael Tarver gimmick, where he's just watching the monitor. And they mentioned that Val Venus has challenged the winner to Raw the next night.
Hardcore Holly was also watching.
Hardcore Holly was also watching. So they were trying to really get across these mid-card talents as fighting for the Intercontinental title and making that mid-card really a real strong area for the company.
And how do you do that? Let them watch the match. Give them a monitor. Give everybody their own personal monitor.
Yes, just like the UFC judges at 131.
Oh, yes.
They go to the floor. Jericho's thrown into the steps. Jericho then lifts Benoit and drops him knee first onto the steps.
Mm-hmm.
This looked extremely brutal.
Yeah. And that was the story. Benoit targeting the shoulder and the arm of Jericho. Jericho working on the knee for
I watched this. It's like,
finishes.
You know, wrestling's a work. It's like, let's work over the knee without you actually fucking up your knee. Whereas Benoit, I just get the sense he was just like, well, just fucking hit me.
Right.
Like, this was
We'll never know. I mean, he was very good at making it look real, so you never know. How.
You watch this spot where he's dropped onto the steps.
Yeah.
There's no give here.
Mm-hmm.
They start working over, or Benoit starts working over the left shoulder of Jericho. And then there was this awkward spot where Benoit tried to take the turnbuckle pad off, and he just could not get this turnbuckle pad off. And then they go over the injuries from this feud in the buildup. We had had a broken nose, a black eye, and then Lawler asks, did Jericho get his tooth knocked out, or did Benoit get his tooth knocked out by Jericho, or has that tooth been gone for a while? And Ross is like, it's been a while since that tooth has been in.
What is the story? How did he get that tooth?
The story, when I... There was one time I was in studio with Benoit, and I asked him that during the break, and he told me it was when he was fighting, not fighting, but he was playing with a dog, and the dog like hit him right in the face and knocked his tooth out.
I see.
Because there's always been these stories going on about the tooth.
Gotcha.
Where are we here? Jericho, Benoit has an arm bar, but Jericho gets out, and then Jericho takes the brace off and starts whipping Benoit with the knee brace. Didn't look pleasant at all. Jericho hits the lion salt, and then as Benoit tries to send Jericho over the top rope, Jericho grabs onto the legs and applies the walls of Jericho onto Benoit on the ropes.
Like the tarantula.
Yeah, exactly like the tarantula. And Benoit powers out with kicks to the head of Jericho. And then what could have been one of the first times he introduced this, we saw Benoit deliver a set of two rolling Germans here.
What do you mean?
I had never seen him do that spot before this. This was 2000.
He never did it in WCW? The German suplexes?
Consecutively with holding on to a guy? I could be wrong. Maybe I'm mistaken. This would have been the first time. Because in the WWF, at least, I always remembered, maybe it's because he did them so much, that match he had with Austin in like 2001 where he did like the 10.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first time I think that became part of his repertoire. Yeah, you're right. I'm sure he did in WCW, actually, now that I think of it. Stupid point, Pollock. Anyway, Jericho goes for the walls again, but Benoit clocks him with the brace.
Yeah, I really like that. I mean, you had the brace. It wasn't an obvious-looking thing because the brace was, like, all the way on the other side of the ring, and Benoit actually had to squirm on his back. What do you call that, like, in jiu-jitsu?
Shrimping.
Shrimping, yeah. You had to shrimp to reach the brace.
And he just clocked Jericho in the face with this brace and then applied the crossface, and this is where I thought the announcers were great. They were selling this huge, that Jericho was in all this pain. The one problem here was that you didn't have the ability for Jericho to really sell this because his fucking hair was all in the way. His right. hair covered his face. Hmm. And that to me took I hate Jericho's hair at this point. It's so annoying.
I don't mind it. Wow. I mean, okay.
It looks so goofy now. It suited him 11 years ago, obviously. But anyway, but the announcers, I thought they sold this well that, oh, Jericho's going blue. The fans weren't reacting too much to this, and it ends up with the ref stopping the match, and I just thought Ross and Lawler really sold the finish well, that Benoit got the win because Jericho went out cold, Jericho didn't give up, and they had to pull Benoit off of him. Mm-hmm. And I thought the announcers made up for the lack of crowd reaction to this finish.
Sure, absolutely.
And Ross then said that Benoit is the king of this ring tonight, and then they go to a commercial for the King of the Ring coming up next month. They recap the Jerry Briscoe segments from tonight, and then Michael Cole is with Jerry Briscoe backstage, and as he's talking, these two vendors walk up from behind, and Jerry just keeps talking and talking. He turns around. One of the vendors has this thing of all this pop, and he just kicks it into his face. Pop goes all over this nerd, and then he hits the other guy with popcorn and pop, and Briscoe just runs away. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed this a lot.
Yeah,
watching these two idiots try and outsmart Briscoe. Then The Rock is cutting a promo on Shawn Michaels, saying you better call the match down the middle or they're going to have problems. And if they have problems, it's not going to take an hour. And Michaels just rolls his eyes as The Rock leaves. And then we get another stipulation match. It's a tables match with X-Pac and Road Dogg, accompanied by Tori, the original Tori, mm-hmm. coming out to their DX Aggression theme.
By Run-DMC.
Run-DMC, the best track on that Aggression album, in my opinion.
I don't really remember all of it, but sure. I didn't think that was a bad album, though.
Really?
I think there were some good songs.
We definitely have to review that album some week. I got to find it.
Let's do it.
And obviously, tables match, they're taking on the Dudley Boys, who were baby faces here at this point. Mm-hmm. And they show an angle from Raw where Tori splashed Bubba Ray through a table off the top rope to the floor, and then they show Bubba backstage in this orgasmic state after being put through a table. Mm-hmm. They played up, this was this weird part with Bubba Ray where they played up like this, like, wood fetish that Bubba Ray had.
Yeah, he likes to slam women through tables.
Or get slammed through.
It totally worked. It got them over, I thought.
And they start the match off with the Dudleys getting the advantage. They hit the diving, Devon hits the diving headbutt off the top rope to both Road Dogg and X-Pac. But then DX teases leaving the match. The Dudleys stop them and bring them back. And Lawler, with the line of the show, says, evil spelled backwards is live, and Tori likes to live on the edge.
Oh.
Horrendous.
Terrible.
The heels get the heat back with Devon. X-Pac hits the Bronco Buster to Devon. And then Devon makes the tag, but the referee doesn't see it, so they have to keep Devon in the ring. Devon then hits a clothesline to both of them, makes the tag to Bubba, and then calls for the tables.
I found this to be a pretty standard but decent tag match for the most part.
Yeah, and what's really interesting is that the Dudleys were, I thought, really, really well here. Uh-huh. They had never played baby faces before this. Right, I mean, this was a brand new for them, to these very heel characters to transfer over to being baby faces, and I thought they were fantastic here as baby faces. Yep. They set up a table on the floor, and Road Dogg hits a pump handle slam, putting Devon through the table on the floor, and you got to put both guys through tables to win the match. There's an Irish whip to Bubba, but then X-Pac goes for a leapfrog and gets a lot more height than Christina did, and X-Pac is caught by Bubba Ray and powerbombed through a table, so one guy from each side has gone through a table at this point. Then the ref gets in between Bubba and Road Dogg and Bubba collectively hip-toss the referee through a table, which was stupid. Then, for whatever reason, Jerry Briscoe runs out with the hardcore title,
And they hit a 3D to Road Dogg through the table, but the referee is out, so they would have won the match had the referee been conscious. Briscoe then pulls Road Dogg out of the ring. Torrey then gets into the ring and is attacking Bubba. Bubba grabs her, and they go to powerbomb Torrey through the table, but it's Jerry Briscoe that stops the 300-pound Bubba Ray from powerbombing her off the second rope. And then Road Dogg and X-Pac help Torrey down, and all of a sudden, they attack Bubba. X-Pac hits the X-Factor off of the second rope to Bubba through the table as the referee comes back alive, sees Bubba going through the table, and DX gets the win here. And they let the Dudleys get their heat back by attacking Briscoe after the match. Devon sets up a table, and they hit a 3D to Briscoe through a table to end the segment here.
Now, at this point, I'm assuming the whole reason for the Briscoe interference was, you know, for the payoff to the skits earlier on. I thought,
why wouldn't someone run out here?
Well, I thought at least one of the referees or somebody would come and cover Briscoe, but no one comes out. What was the point of the skits? I thought this was the whole, you know, this was the punchline. But this match itself, I thought it was good. It wasn't like, it wasn't memorable like some of the other matches that the Dudleys and ENC and Hardys were having at the time. But it was a standard tag match with tables thrown in for the finish. It was fine.
Then we get a weird promo with these little kids right out of a horror movie or something. And the tagline of "His Judgment Day is Coming" is written on the screen. And then it changes to "His Judgment Day is Here" with a Kid Rock song playing in the background. So in case you weren't sure of what was happening, something was going to occur in the main event.
Mm-hmm.
What could it be? Then we get a video package for the main event. Features The Rock winning the WWF title at Backlash 3 weeks before this event. And then Hunter challenging him to an Iron Man match. And then Shawn Michaels returning. And they show Shawn Michaels returning on Raw wearing a blazer, a t-shirt, and a baseball cap.
Mm-hmm.
It's been 11 years of this man hiding his hairline.
Yeah.
And then I guess they wanted some B-roll of Shawn Michaels as a referee. So we got the Wrestling with Shadows SummerSlam 1997.
Yeah.
Shawn Michaels in a referee shirt.
Wait, was it...
From the Bret Undertaker match.
It wasn't a shot from the documentary, was it?
Well, no, but it's the footage that you would have seen in the documentary of him coming out and dancing in the ring in his referee shirt. And they actually bring up a SmackDown angle from the summer of 1999. It was the very first episode of SmackDown, where the main event was Triple H and The Rock, and it ended with Michael super-kicking Rock and letting Triple H defeat The Rock. So it was playing off of something that had happened months and months prior.
Mm-hmm.
And
on TV, no.
Theoretically, I mean, the storyline was Linda McMahon announced Michaels as the referee, but the last we had seen Michaels, he had turned heel, helping Hunter beat The Rock. So, didn't make a whole lot of sense here for the babyface Linda McMahon to pick Shawn Michaels as the ref.
Oh, he knew that Michaels had changed his ways.
Oh, had he? Okay. Triple H comes out with Vince, Shane, Stephanie, and then he gets into the ring and he says he wants to do this one-on-one with The Rock, and he sends everyone to the back. Should have just told them this before the match, before wasting their time of walking all the way out.
It's true. Yeah.
Rock comes out. Place is going nuts for The Rock here, and huge crowd reaction here at the start of this match. So we got Rock, Triple H, Iron Man match for the WWF title with Shawn Michaels as our referee. And Lawler, before Michaels came out, he seemed so excited to find out if Shawn Michaels was going to wear the shorts. He said this out loud. Is Shawn going to wear the shorts?
No. And yes, he did wear the shorts.
Fans were going nuts, chanting Rocky. They have a stare down. They're swearing at each other. This was very vulgar, if you could pick up what they were saying.
And, what were they saying?
Oh, Rock was saying, come on, motherfucker, and... If you could read lips, they were very angry at each other. This was heat.
Yeah.
And right here, I was watching my old tape, and a crawl came across promoting the fact that on May 27th, World Extreme Fighting will be airing on Viewer's Choice pay-per-view. And I looked this card up, Way, and a lot of notable names on this card. Matt Hughes, Rich Franklin, Conan Silvera, there were some others. Look it up. World Extreme Fighting 9 from May of 2000.
Extreme Fighting. Wow. World Extreme Fighting. Weird.
I was looking at the card. I'm like, this was a hell of a card.
Not the WEC.
No, it wasn't WEC. World Extreme Fighting.
Okay. Interesting.
Anyway, so we start the show off. This crowd was nuts. They start off with just the most basic of basic moves. You're pacing here for a 60-minute match, so they're going for headlocks, tie-ups. They were stalling by Hunter, but the crowd was really into it. Mm-hmm. And they bring up that the only other Iron Man match of the modern era was Bret and Shawn. And then Ross and Lawler bring up the fact that the longest these two have ever been in the ring was at the July Fully Loaded pay-per-view in 1998, where they went to a 30-minute draw. And I could have sworn this was wrong. So I looked it up. 2 months prior, at WrestleMania 2000, according to Wikipedia, they had a four-way match in the main event mm-hmm. where it came down to Hunter and Rock as the final two, which went 36 minutes and 28 seconds. How did they, 2 months earlier, they had done a longer match?
Hmm. Well, maybe they meant the two of them individually.
Well, fine. Okay. Hunter works over the left arm of Rock, and then, this is weird, out of nowhere, Rock just comes back and hits a rock bottom at the 11-minute mark to get the 1-0 advantage. Mm-hmm. Then they fight down the aisle, they go around the ring. Back in the ring, Rock applies a figure four. Hunter finally reverses it, and then they make their way to the floor with Hunter really selling the damage from the figure four.
Now, which knee was he working on? Any idea?
I'm not sure.
Okay. I just asked because like Hunter was going for his usual face busters and high knees afterwards, and I wasn't sure.
They brawl into the crowd and then quickly came back. Rock again is working over the knee of Hunter, and all of a sudden, Hunter hits a pedigree out of nowhere to tie it up 1-1. I thought the two finishes came just very unexpectedly, but maybe they wanted that. 2 minutes later, Hunter gets another pinfall with the worst small package in the history of wrestling. This looked horrendous. Hunter's up 2-1. Then they go down the aisle with Rock selling his beating. Hunter is then sent into the steel entrance right at the entrance. And they put over the fact that they have now passed the 30-minute mark, and it is the longest either has ever been in a match. There's a back body drop to Hunter on the floor, and then Hunter hits a jumping pile driver in the ring, and he gets another pin with 27:30 left in the match, so Hunter's up 3-1. Rock makes a short comeback, but he's cut off with a shoulder block. Then we get the flare spot where Hunter goes to the top, but he's tossed off the top rope. They trade sleepers and reverse chin locks. Rock hits a belly-to-belly suplex. They rest, and then finally Rock comes back. He hits a DDT, and he gets a fall with just under 20 minutes left. So it's 3-2 for Hunter. They were going just through tons of falls here in the last, 20 minutes. They're on the floor. Hunter has a chair, but Michael stops Hunter from using the chair, and Rock tosses Hunter into the steps with his right shoulder hitting first and then hits a neck breaker on the floor. Hunter then is in the ring, and he hits Rock with a chair, and Rock gets his hand up before it hits him in the head, and Michael calls for a DQ, so it's tied up at 3. But then, with Rock still selling the effects of the chair shot, and he's been busted open at this point from the chair, Hunter immediately pins the Rock with his feet on the rope, so Hunter takes a 4-3 lead, and Lawler calls this one of the most brilliant things he has ever seen done in the history of the industry. Getting DQ'd with a chair shot and then pinning him right afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
The most brilliant idea ever in business.
Maybe he means just what Hunter has done in general to get to this point.
It is pretty impressive.
He's a genius.
Hunter then applies a sleeper hold, but Rock keeps his arm up after 2, makes a comeback, then gets back into the sleeper, and Hunter gets another fall with 12:30 left. He's up 5-3. Michaels then forces Hunter to break the hold because after each fall, they have to relinquish a hold. Then they tease problems with Hunter and Shawn where they stare down each other and they shove each other. Michaels just looks ridiculous here with his shirt covering his shorts. It looks like he's wearing a nightie or something. It was just a horrendous look for this man who was never exactly a fashion plate. Rock then tosses Hunter into the corner and takes out a cameraman. Hunter gets crotched on the top rope, but then fights off the Rock. Rock comes back, hits a superplex to Hunter, and both are being counted out on the apron as Rock rolls over for a 2 count. They go back to the floor. Hunter's catapulted into the ring post. Then Rocked is tossed into the steps. They go over to the announce table. Hunter goes for a rock bottom onto the announce table, but Rock stops Hunter and hits a pedigree to Hunter. Table doesn't break. Rock gets back into the ring as Hunter's counted out. And Hunter is also bleeding at this point. So with under 4 minutes left, it is 5-4 for Hunter. And this is when Vince, Shane, and Stephanie come out. They tease another count out for Hunter, but again he returns. And Rock knocks Vince and Shane off the apron, hits a spinebuster to Hunter, people's elbow, and he pins them with under 2 minutes left, so it's tied 5-5. And the crowd is going nuts here. Mm-hmm. It's all tied up, 2 minutes to go. And then Shane pulls Shawn Michaels out, and Michaels decks both Vince and Shane. Road Dogg and X-Pac run out. Rock hits another rock bottom onto Hunter. And then Undertaker's entrance begins. Shane hits Rock with a chair shot. Undertaker's out on a motorcycle, and they hit a pedigree to the Rock in the ring. Undertaker then takes out everybody with choke slams, punches, and with 5 seconds left, Hunter takes a choke slam, and then after the buzzer should have gone, he hits Hunter with a tombstone, and they basically, the clock goes off the screen, so they extend the time by like 5 or 10 seconds.
Well, you knew that the time, you heard the buzzer before the actual move happened. So.
Well, he hit the choke slam in time.
Okay, but Michaels didn't officially call for the, yeah. I don't think Michaels saw it. Anyway, they seemed to mess it up. Yeah, they messed up the time.
And Michaels rules that The Rock is disqualified for the final set of interference by The Undertaker, and Hunter wins the title with a score of 6-5. I thought The Undertaker looked really dumb here.
Yeah.
I mean, he came back, huge, huge reaction, but it was like this guy wanted to attack Hunter, so he can't wait a minute till this match is over.
Yeah.
He attacks Hunter and basically gives him the title.
Yeah, he's an idiot.
And if I was The Rock, I would be pissed at The Undertaker.
Yeah, I would.
And
I would
instead he teams with him on the next pay-per-view.
Well, and keep in mind, too, this is the debut of Taker's new gimmick.
Yes,
so
as the biker.
I don't know. I wasn't watching this at this time, but were you personally confused when you saw this, or did you just accept Undertaker in this new gimmick right away?
I think I'd heard for a while that he was going to be coming back with like a new gimmick. So it wasn't as much a... It was a big change from his, like, he was doing the whole, like, satanic gimmick when he left. He had been gone since, like, August or September of the prior year. He was out for a while. He missed WrestleMania in 2000. This was the last WrestleMania he missed. So it was a big change for his character. I wasn't a giant fan of it to begin with, but mm-hmm. I guess he kind of, it suited him for that time period.
Yeah. No, it was fine. But yeah, the match itself, I'm not really a big fan of 60-minute Iron Man matches. I consider them to be great draws, and I think they're a real legitimate physical feat, but I personally don't find them incredibly exciting because I know when the finish is coming, and I know I can tune out until the last 5 minutes.
Well, that's why they've done poorly on television.
It makes no sense for TV.
Yeah, you know when it's finishing. To me, I thought this match was somewhat hampered by the lack of faith these guys had in just keep, like, this was obviously something very daunting to go out there for 60 minutes and keep the crowd into it. I thought they did too many falls. To me personally, it was like you could have kept it, you know, I'm not saying go 0-0 because I did think the fans really got into Rock being down by two falls and having to try and make it up. I mean, that part was dramatic, but you saw 11 falls in this between the DQs and countouts and pinfalls. I just thought it was too much. They relied a lot on interference, on brawling through the crowd. It's like these two are competent enough to do a 60-minute match with, I think, half of the stuff they booked in this match.
Sure. And the finish was way overbooked. Way overbooked.
I agree.
With Taker pretty much...
Didn't make any sense for Undertaker to interfere.
And the finish itself pretty much neglected the rest of the match. And so I felt kind of robbed, you know, for investing an hour and then having this fucked up finish at the end of it.
And to me, it really... gives a lot of credit to Brett and Shawn, the fact that they went 60 minutes without any falls.
Sure.
I mean, absolutely. That kind of, you know, if the crowd's down, give them a fall to kind of spark some interest in the match. They had nothing in that match. Mm-hmm. So I would definitely rank the Brett-Shawn match above this. And then since that time, they haven't done too many Iron Man matches. We got Kurt and Brock on SmackDown, mm-hmm. Hunter and Hunter and Benoit did one in Pittsburgh 1 year. And then the last one, we had Cena and Orton do one a few years back at Bragging Rights. So there's only been five that the WWE has done that, that have been promoted as Iron Man matches. So
maybe we'll see an all Iron Man match pay-per-view one of these days.
Maybe. Maybe we'll get three matches.
Iron Man.
Yes.
Your thoughts on the show overall?
This was a good show. Mm-hmm. I remember when this card was announced, I was really looking forward to it. I was looking forward to the Iron Man, the submission match. I was like, this is that'll be great. Yep. And then you had the three-way with Eddie, Perry, and Malenko.
Yep.
That looked really good on paper. The tables match. Like, there did not look to be a bad match on this show. Mm-hmm. Even Shane Big Show, they booked it to so that the crowd was into it.
Yeah. There were no bad matches on the show.
Yeah, I thought this was a good card. I expected a little more of some things, but I had some higher expectations for it. So I give this card a 7.5 out of 10. I thought they worked hard in the main event, and I mean, going 60 minutes is like no easy feat.
It is. It's absolutely a very big feat. I thought it was a good show, but I didn't find anything too memorable about it. So to me, it just exists as a good show with a 7 out of 10.
And you also look at this time period. I mean, we harp on, you know, just title changes right now. Like, even at this point, like, we had seen Rock won the title 3 weeks before this at Backlash. He loses it here at Judgment Day, and then he would win it back at the King of the Ring.
Was Rock champion going into this?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
So, a great job they did there.
Oh.
Which even made it dumber that Hunter wins the title based on this DQ with Undertaker. Like, it would have even made more sense if Undertaker was going to be turning heel here, that he helped Hunter, but he wasn't. So I thought it just made Undertaker look kind of dumb for not realizing what he was doing here.
Yeah.
And the show ended with Undertaker stalking Shawn Michaels to the back in a stare down that would culminate 9 years later at WrestleMania.
Was that how the show ended?
It started, Shawn was going back and Hunter was going, or Undertaker was going after Shawn.
Oh, yeah? And what was the reason they gave for Taker attacking the McMahons? How did he leave? Do you remember? In the first,
it was an injury angle, and I guess I can't remember the exact injury angle.
Oh, we'll look it up.
So anyway, one other thing in this main event, Shawn Michaels added nothing to this, unless you wanted to tease that Michaels was gonna fuck the Rock.
Well, and also the connection to the previous Iron Man match, I suppose, right?
Yeah, yeah, I guess.
But did they not explain afterwards that, you know, Michaels was Michaels did a good job, or
he wasn't brought back any time after that? Okay. So it should also, the prior month they had brought in Steve Austin as the special referee for the main event because he was out with neck surgery, and that Backlash did a huge number with the addition of Austin as a referee.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they wanted, you know, we're coming back in 3 weeks, we want to have something that's a draw, and Shawn coming back on pay-per-view might be that. Anyway, we are now going to get into your feedback, everybody. Let's start off with the feedback way. Alexander Rios. To me, Judgment Day 2000 was a great pay-per-view, one I didn't get to watch that night. I had to wait a week for my best friend in high school at the time to make me a bootleg copy on VHS. Triple H and The Rock tore the house down. Shawn Michaels making a rare cameo, as was the theme during the Attitude Era after his WrestleMania 14 match with Austin. Undertaker starting the first of his many, many comebacks that would follow in the years to come. This one being the debut of the American Badass driving down on a motorcycle to Kid Rock. Looking back on it, I can certainly understand why people were upset at the gimmick change, but being the contrarian that I am, I absolutely loved it because it was no longer a heavy gimmick, just himself with the volume turned up. Shane and Big Show was okay, but the knee injury was worked in to get him off TV for about the rest of the year. Oh, this was when Big Show was sent down to Ohio Valley Wrestling because he had put on too much weight and then didn't lose any weight and was brought back. At the end of the day, for an Attitude Era show, if not for the Iron Man match and Taker coming back, this would have been a substandard show.
Yeah, sure. William Stewart Young. I find it funny that on this pay-per-view, Shane McMahon is a heel against the Big Show, but less than a year later at Backlash 2001, if I remember correctly, Shane would actually be the babyface in a similar gimmick match against Show and win again. Sorry, John, looks like your favorite spot monkey wins in the end. Interesting.
Aram Nasrala. Hey, Wei and John, my memory of Judgment Day 2000. I like the Iron Man match much more than the Brett HBK match because of the several pinfalls. But where there are plans for, Were there any plans for Michaels and Rock at some point? I can remember if they mention it on the pay-per-view, but HBK cost The Rock a match against Hunter the year before. But it was really crazy when you compare WWF at this time with WCW. I couldn't get WWF television in Denmark, but they did air WCW Thunder. So instead of watching The Rock, Jericho, Taker angle each week, I had to watch Big T, Ahmed Johnson, General Huge Erection, The Kiss Demon, and Positively Canyon, and the David Arquette WCW title win, which would be a fun review. I know you're not a fan of the shitty WCW pay-per-views, but I do enjoy when you do make some chicken shit pay-per-views into chicken salad.
Eric Creamer, regarding Beulah's leg position at One Night Stand 2005, it is referred to as the legs akimbo position. Knowing what we know, what happened to... Knowing what we know hap- that this is sorry weird sentence post December dismember, that interview with Paul Heyman was a great addition to the podcast, especially hearing the slight discomfort he had discussing certain things. Am I happy? Great line. Yes, that was a really good interview.
That interview was done on Friday, and on Monday Paul Heyman left the company. Well, he went home. Him and Vince agreed he was not going to work anymore on the team. And that was really just days before the exit of Paul Heyman from pro wrestling, really. Yeah. Next, over to Jordan Ducharme. I'm surprised you just passed over the release of the Rise and Fall of ECW book, John. You were quoted at the end of it, I'm pretty sure, unless they found another John Pollock that's in the business. Now, wait, I've had a book of this lying around, and I don't know where it is now. I had never heard of this, if I'm quoted in this, nor do I know why I would be quoted in this book.
Hmm, interesting. If somebody has the copy.
If someone can screen grab that, I would love to see it.
You can get some royalties.
Yeah, fuckers stole my quote. That's intellectual property of whatever it was. You can't just take quotes.
At least a free copy.
At will here.
They did give you a free copy.
They
right?
did. Oh, I've okay. got somewhere. It's probably my storage area somewhere.
So at least so you got more than Jim Ross, who on his blog this week was bitching about how Beyond the Mat never gave him a copy, even for appearing on
They didn't give him a copy?
No, he's still waiting. Steve Kassan, from listening to the review away One Night Stand 06 opening, interesting choice of Diddy. One could say Puff is the same as Paul Heyman. Diddy tried to restart Bad Boy with Black Rob, Shine, etc., but it didn't capture the same effect that Biggie, Junior Mafia, Mace, and Little Kim had. Also, I agree with John. Knowing the spoiler of, say, What Happens, or a movie... Oh, God. Knowing a spoiler... of a movie does not affect my enjoyment of the product. I even read the spoilers for Impact, yet watch it. To me, it has to do with the execution. I'm really irked when people do not know the spoilers of a film before they see it. Oh, do not want to know the spoilers of a film before they see it. Does that hinder your experience the next time you watch it? Everyone knows Vader is Luke's father. Does that mean you watch Empire only once and that is it? Everyone knows Hogan turns on Sting, Savage and Luger, and join with Nash and Hall. Does that stop you from revisiting that monumental event? I chatted about this in response to Steve on the site, and I don't think you can make that criticism because there are two very distinct viewings, the first time you watch it and then the second time you watch it.
Sure, and it's not, you know, I'm not saying that it's, you know, the exact same experience if you're surprised. It's great to be surprised.
Yeah.
It's great to watch something and get a genuine surprise. I'm just saying me personally, I don't find that really hampers my enjoyment knowing something ahead of time. However, our whole point on the spoilers was that, listen, it's incredibly difficult in this day and age to avoid them. And I think believing that going online that you can avoid them and that if you see spoilers, it's their fault, I think that's a little ridiculous. Mm. Like, you know, you've got to be pretty proactive now to avoid spoilers. And, you know, if you come across them, you shouldn't be on these websites that are wrestling related. So
I think
you can't expect people to just – if an event has happened, it's happened in my opinion. Like
sure.
That's it.
Yeah, well – I feel some compassion for the people that, you know, want to be surprised. And unless it's – if it's something very typical like last week's Impact tapings or something, then you don't go around spoiling it for people. But if it's something that facilitates a lot of discussion, I think there's more value in the discussion than to wait. And that's really what our purpose is for building this community, is so fans can discuss these topics. And if it's a story big enough, like the Christian title change, then I think you should just talk about it. Let's go to Brian Camacho. Interesting review of One Night Stand 06. The Cena RVD match is something that demonstrates how hostile... Oh, I'm sorry, this was yours, but I'll continue.
Yes.
The Cena RVD match is something that demonstrates how hostile and crazy the New York City crowd can be. Who would forget if Cena wins, we riot sign? That same fan attended the sci-fi taping 2 months later.
Travers Cummings, I totally agree with everything John said at the top of the show about change and spoilers. I work at my local horse racing track, and we have recently went through a massive change, bringing in new betting machines. Of course, because it was new, even though it is better, customers went nuts and complained about everything. But a month into it, nobody is whining about it anymore. It's just a matter of getting used to it. And as far as the spoilers go, who gives a shit when you hear about something? Obviously, someone was going to post down here that Christian lost the title. It's a wrestling site. Anyone who got that upset about it needs to have a few more hobbies going on in their lives. Deuces.
Okay. Brent Chittenden, so here's a question for everyone. Did John Cena's motto of hustle, loyalty, respect come from something else, i.e. a rapper, a film, etc.? I only asked this because I noticed a guy at my plant who has the words tattooed around his neck. And quite frankly, if it is only a John Cena reference, I may have to laugh at the bit man every time I walk by his station.
Stephen Smith. On the subject of archiving the old Review of Raw and Review and Impacts, I'd certainly like to see them all in one place. I actually listened to a Review of Raw from September 2010, just a few days ago, and it's amazing to look back only 7 months and see guys like Tyson Kidd and Daniel Bryan in brighter spots than they are now. No rush, though. I know that must be a lot of work.
Daniel Bryan? Really? From 7 months earlier?
That's when he was like U.S. champ and
yeah,
he was
what
getting
is
those
he...
matches with Ziggler.
And what is he now?
Well, he's forgotten.
Oh,
he's saying
okay,
he was better back then.
Yeah. I mean, Tyson Kidd is doing well now.
He's on Superstars.
With Michael Hayes.
I'm so excited Michael Hayes is on TV.
Yeah, that'll be good.
I'm amazed because it's like they're bringing a manager back. I mean, that alone is a big step. Mm-hmm. It's like you've got all these guys backstage that'd be fantastic mouthpieces.
Arn Anderson.
Fuck, man, get Arn out there.
Yeah.
Use Ricky for something. Like,
sure.
Man, you've got these guys. Use them. Michael Hayes, to me, you put him on TV. I mean, Kid's going to get over, I think, if you present him right.
I hope so.
I always enjoyed Hayes when he was paired with the Hardys early on. I thought that helped the Hardys a lot.
I thought it was good, too. I just found it really weird.
It was weird because he was dressed in the Hot Topic stuff with them.
Yeah.
It was very awkward.
Michael Hayes wearing these tight velour shirts.
Michael Hayes can pull off anything, though.
Okay. So, on the subject of archiving the old Reveal Raw and Impacts, well... you know, they are all currently available on thefightnetwork.com/podcast, but not as cleanly as, you know, maybe we'd like, but we'll work on that.
We kind of glazed over Brent's too. I've never heard hustle, loyalty, and respect outside of John Cena myself, but you're more into the rap community than me.
I've never heard that.
No.
I'm not that into it, maybe. Fidel Alvarez, I will say it's funny that John and Wei like the R-Truth promo because it's different, but I find Booker announcing on SmackDown different, which is why I find it somewhat entertaining, so I guess I see that reasoning. That being said, I didn't hate all of his promo. His facials really saved it for me. The whole talking to himself is kind of funny, but I thought only Randy Orton heard voices in his head. I still think he sounds scripted and forced. The whole hospital food thing sounded dumb to me, but I guess we can agree to disagree.
Don't know what it is with Booker that people, it's like they're so hung up on the fact that, you know, some of us don't care for him. It's like, if you enjoy him, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying like our opinions are you know, set in stone.
People disagree and they just want to voice that. So
I don't know. I don't see it in Booker. I don't see where people get it.
I personally don't either.
I find he doesn't add anything to the
matches. I think he talks too much.
He talks too much. He makes like dumb points at times.
Mm-hmm.
Lately, they've been trying to, I guess, get him a little more serious when it comes to talking about winning title belts and stuff. But, I mean, fuck, he was just like 2 weeks ago during one of Kofi's matches, he started playing heel and like running down Kofi. It's like, what's going on here? Are you a babyface? Are you a heel?
Right.
I don't know. It doesn't work for me with Booker. I'm sorry. But R-Truth, I've made a 180 after this past Monday. I really enjoyed his stuff on Monday.
Yeah. It's an original character, and that's why...
Jason Sherman, Hey guys, great show as usual. I thought Raw was okay, nothing really great, and it certainly didn't make me want to order the pay-per-view. When you talked about R-Truth and his liver lips comment, he has a history of making ridiculous comments. About a year ago on Twitter, he said something along the lines of, pretty maunin', everyone. Chicken kneecaps and duck ankles. A bunch of us were like, what the fuck are dunk ankles? He did a Ask Me Questions Here Now on Twitter deal, and a lot of us bombarded him, asking him what dunk ankles are, and he blocked all of us. He was a heel long before his actual turn, in my eyes. Great interview with Dustin. I was at an FCW show during a meet and greet with Dusty Rhodes, Cody, and Goldust. He was out there keeping an eye on the line in the referee shirt, and some redneck asked him, are you a referee? I responded saying, no, he is a Footlocker employee. Just thought he was kind of funny. Oh, this is Dustin who... responded with that. Keep up the great work, guys. So there you go.
No.
Is that what
Jason responded? Jason was joking. You idiot. Of course he's a referee.
Oh, okay. Just thought that was kind of okay. Yeah, I was lost there. Thank you, Jason, for the report.
I can't believe he blocked you for asking about duck ankles.
Maybe he knew this heel turn was coming.
Maybe. Finally, from Matt Bouchard. Two questions for you guys. Out of all the pay-per-views that have been reviewed, which do you think is the worst of all time?
Oh, wow.
And John, it seems every time you review a WCW pay-per-view, you're always crapping on Sting. Sting is one of the best. What's the problem you have with him, or is it just those particular matches?
Listen, Sting, it will never be regarded as one of the all-time great workers, okay? He was as good as the guy he was in the ring with, okay? And if you don't believe me, go watch some of his Luger matches or some matches he did with the Road Warriors and contrast them to when he was in there with guys like Flair or, you know, whoever of that time period. I always thought Sting was a fantastic character that people who watched WCW loved him as a character, but don't try and tell me that Sting was one of the elite level workers. And I just I always felt with Sting, you knew what you were going to get with this guy based on who was standing across the ring from him. And to be honest, his promos especially way better now in TNA than they were back then. I think at times, I mean, the guy works really, really hard. I don't want to, like, shit on the guy. He works really hard in TNA.
Right.
He's got a fucked up shoulder right now, and he seems like a guy that is very much committed to TNA, and I applaud him for that. But
you're just speaking about, you know, talent and ability.
I mean, that's and I don't even remember too many instances of us, you know, reviewing shows with Sting on where...
I think it's just because we review so many bad WCW shows, maybe.
WCW, it's a very small window of quality shows that we've reviewed. The worst show we've ever reviewed of all time, Way.
It's difficult to think back.
Heroes was obviously really bad.
See, but I didn't consider them to be awful viewing experiences.
Oh, you know what the worst one, I think? It was, I would probably say that Halloween Havoc 2000. I remember watching that and just not wanting to go near that time period ever again. Because it was so, it was just so depressing.
Yeah, I blocked it out of my memory.
I'll put Halloween Havoc as off the top of my head. That was the worst.
What was on that? What was on that? Which one was that?
Oh, I think Goldberg against Luger and Bagwell.
Okay.
Scott Steiner.
Enough.
Against Sid.
Enough. Stop. Don't mention.
Chronic was in there with. Maybe it was Chronic against Goldberg. I believe. Yeah, it was Chronic and Goldberg.
Dig that up if you guys want to.
So there, everyone.
Relive.
What do you think the worst shows are that we've reviewed?
Yeah.
What do you guys think?
Which one do we sound most depressed in?
That's the key. Probably the one Unforgiven 99 where we had to do it three times. That would be the most annoying one
could
ever.
Be it.
There was a combination of that we had to do three times.
Oh God.
And the one where we were finishing our documentary, it was going to air on a Monday, and the Sunday morning we had to do a review. So, Wei, what an eventful edition of Review Away.
Yeah, very much so.
So, tons going on here this week, and we encourage everyone to move on over to reviewaway.com or simply facebook.com/reviewaway, our brand new group, which we hope you've migrated over to and are enjoying the new fan page, Wei, because lots of cool functions up there.
You know, at least half of the people that were at our old group within a week have already...
Well, where's the other half? Where are they?
Maybe we did something wrong.
Man, it's like the WCW audience.
Yeah.
Where did they go?
I'm happy with half. These are the important half.
I want the quality. I don't want the quantity.
Okay.
So that's going to finish us up, everyone, for this week. Next week, back by popular demand, W.H. Park is going to be joining. I almost called him away.
No.
Sorry. W.H. Park is going to be back here in studio, everyone. We wanted to follow up with last month's ultra successful Super J Cup review, which I will say I believe was the most feedback we got for the show. And I didn't get any negative feedback to that show. So someone's going to send me an email tonight saying they just detested Japanese wrestling. But next week, we wanted to have WH in before he moves. He is moving to Japan in just a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So we wanted to get in one more appearance from Mr. Park. And we're going to be reviewing the 1995 J Cup, which is a very, very well-known event, featuring a match we reviewed tonight with Chris Benoit and Chris Jericho.
A very early incarnation of that match.
Yes.
And a very different style. So, yeah, very interesting, the contrast. And if you have any questions about Japanese wrestling, please.
Yeah, for feedback, don't limit it to just the J Cup. If you just some random questions, WH is like the expert to ask about this stuff. Yeah. So if you feel like picking his brain, just send in any questions you have about Japanese wrestling or about that specific event, the J Cup from December of 95. We'd be happy to answer that. So that's coming up next week. And way as we finish off here, coming up Sunday night on The Law. Too long a week.
You are tired.
Too many shows.
You mean what? You want to talk about what we just heard on The Law?
Yeah, exactly. Tuesday, we're back with Review of Raw, everybody. And congratulations to our winner of the WWE All-Stars game, which we handed out earlier tonight.
Yeah, congratulations. So, I mean, we like this guy a lot.
Got all the keywords correct. Okay. And then we're successful in the draw. So let's finish things off, Wei. What would you like to hear on our way out?
Well, off of the very successful, very much talked about WWF Aggression album, I would like to hear my favorite track from that song, from that album, See Murder, taking Gangrel's theme, and here's a man, the brother of one Master P, who is now in jail, I believe, for murder. So his name is See Murder, and he's actually now in jail for murder, rapping to Gangrel's theme, and this is a song called I Won't Stop Till I See Blood.
Apparently he didn't.
Oh, yeah. One, two, Gangrel is coming for Clement. He didn't wait for Daddy I won't stop till I see blood. I won't stop till I see blood. I can't stop till I see blood. I won't stop till I see blood. I won't stop till I see blood. I won't stop till I see blood. I can't stop till I see blood. I got the evil in my eye. I'm straight from the grave, dressed in all black. I'm looking for a slave. Call me the Reaper. You want me to tear? Call me Gangrel. I'm straight out of hell. I need blood. I'm looking for a victim. The bruise, I'm with them. Let's go get them. Lock up your doors and throw away the key. You can't run from me. Look at my teeth. I'm sleeping in a cage in a kill at night. I know it ain't right, but I hate the sunlight. And know you ain't dreaming. This is not a nightmare. Cause when you wake up, guess what? I'm still there. I'm still there. I won't stop, stop till I see blood. Blood. I won't stop, stop till I see blood. Blood. I won't stop, stop till I see blood. Blood. I can't stop, stop till I see blood. Blood. I won't stop, stop. Till I see blood, I won't stop, stop till I see blood. I won't stop, stop till I see blood. I can't stop, stop till I see blood. Can't see me, not even in the mirror. My reflection is dead. You just took your last breath. Don't call the police, instead call the coroner. Blood got drained out your neck on the corner. The sun goes down, the freaks come out. We bum rush your city, the brew with no pity. Silver bullets, triggers, we pull it. Nothing can save ya, go meet your maker. Running, I catch ya. Fighting, I hit ya. Surrender your soul, immortal and cold. The click with no love, you might call us thugs. Don't give us no hugs, cause we want your blood. I won't stop, stop till I see blood. I won't stop, stop till I see blood. I won't stop, stop till I see blood. I can't stop, stop till I see blood. I won't stop, stop. I won't stop, stop till I see blood. I won't stop, stop till I see blood. I can't stop, stop till I see blood. I won't 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 stop, stop till I see blood.